Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Some families that host au pairs in Massachusetts are seeking help from Beacon Hill following a federal ruling last month that protects au pairs as domestic workers or classes au pairs as the same as domestic workers, requiring they be paid minimum wage and overtime, among other changes. Workers' rights advocates say the ruling is long overdue, but host families are concerned that it will make the au pair model of childcare unaffordable. We're going to speak to people on both sides of the debate. First, we spoke earlier today with Kelly Callahan. She's from Harvard, Massachusetts, and her family hosts au pairs. She's with the group Au Pair Families of Massachusetts. It's a grassroots organization of roughly 1,000 host families concerned about how the ruling will affect the au pair program. Kelly started by telling us how host families are reacting to the federal ruling.
Generally speaking, it's caused a lot of chaos. It happened very quickly, and I think we just didn't see it coming. It was an unknown. And I think where we're all coming from, if you step back beyond the chaos and sort of trying to grapple with how to move forward, I think we're all struggling and saddened by the fact that this might be the end of the au pair program if we look at it and the complications that it's causing and the issues that this ruling is causing. I think we're all saddened by the fact that this might lead to its demise.
How did the chaos and the being caught by surprise happen? Because the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights took effect in 2015. It was intended to cover au pairs even then. The reason it hasn't is because of a lawsuit. So a lot of people have known this was coming for a long time.
Right. Not the families, not the host families, not the au pairs, current au pairs. I think, you know, if you look at the perspective of the host families, we were not up until December 2nd or whatever. We were not employers. We've been part of a cultural exchange program with people from other countries being brought here on J-1 visas that are not work visas, that are not and employment visas, right? Like, they are here for cultural exchange, to experience America, to improve their English, to live with a family, the same way like a Rotary exchange program would work, right? So we haven't been employers. So no, I was not paying attention to the, as a host parent, I wasn't paying attention.
So how did you find out in December then?
The agencies gave us a notification on the 6th that there had been changes, and they were going to start grappling with how to inform us how to move forward.
So they must have known those. So do you have concerns that the agencies didn't notify families before the ruling came down?
Yeah, I find it a little strange that, well, I think it's also important to note that one particular agency was very highly involved.
You mean the one that filed the suit to stop this?
Yes,
cultural care.
Yes, yeah, and I'm unclear as to what the other agencies thought. I think that this particular ruling, there were precedents in, you know, other states have redone labor laws. Take New York, for example. And every time these happen, New York being the example, most recent, I believe, au pairs were pulled out and separated because they fall into a completely different class that is not an employer-employee relationship.
So let me just ask you, why, for the average listener out there who doesn't have an au pair, they might think, why is it a bad thing for au pairs to be covered under the same rights as any other domestic worker? They work in the home. They are entitled to rights. What are the concerns there? Why is this such a disaster from the perspective of host families?
Sure, of course. So I think if you actually look at it from the au pair's perspective also, in many cases, they have far better protections under the federal au pair program. If you look at the protections that are given there and what the rules and the guidelines are there, it's actually very protective. I think what people are missing is that the couple of unfortunate stories that have happened and the situations that have come to the forefront in terms of the negativity of the au pair engagements have been things that were covered under the federal program. This new guideline of putting au pairs, classifying them as domestic employees, does nothing for those protections that people are looking for.
Why is it bad? It adds other things. Why is that a bad thing?
Big challenges are the administration of it. Host families are turned into employees overnight. That means things that I've never done before. It means contracts, which, by the way, my au pair feels uncomfortable signing because they're not supposed to be employed under a J-1 visa. So she's looking at it like, this seems a little bit strange and I'm not supposed to be doing this. But there's contracts. There's different types of timesheets that now have to be tracked. There's workers' comp that I have to get. There's an administrative aspect of it. In addition to, it changes the dynamic pretty significantly with the cultural exchange program because we are paying the minimum wage, which we are for. I'm for the minimum wage. I think that's a good thing. I think that au pairs deserve to have the right financial support to explore and see amazing things. But I think what's being missed is what the host families are providing, which is all living expenses.
So I want to ask you a question there. You said earlier in our conversation that this could mark sort of a big end to or a decline in the program. There is some administrative hassle to getting timesheets and an employment contract, workers' comp. I've done all of those things before. Eventually, they get done. So that's a short-term hurdle. Why are you concerned about long-term impact on the program if you and the organization, this grassroots organization, are comfortable with the minimum wage aspect of this?
Comfortable with minimum wage, but it becomes a very difficult position for a host family to respect and honor the cultural exchange aspects that we're committing to by bringing these people from abroad and overseas who are coming here not to work. They're not coming here for jobs. They're coming here for the experience. And it makes it hard and difficult and challenging for us to honor that cultural experience if all of a sudden this has the dynamic of an employer-employee, if all of a sudden we have to cover every expense that they have while living here in the country, as well as minimum wage.
What's an example of something that would be lost?
My family's tradition, and true story, right? My family's tradition is to spend some time further north in snow, and we spend Christmas up there. We spend holidays up there. We have some New Year's cultural festivities that involve expenses. So all of a sudden now, if I cannot afford to bring my au pair along because I have all these added expenses and I'm not allowed to take the deductions for any living expenses I'm providing her, all of a sudden, that's not bringing her into the family, and that's not giving her the cultural experience that she's here to have. And that's awful. And if I can't give that cultural experience that I'm required to bring as part of the program, then I can't afford to be part of the program.
How much more will it cost you?
In general, for a year, probably an extra $20,000 to $24,000, I believe.
Okay. So what are you hoping to have happen now?
So I think, first of all, there's one thing that's absolutely needed, some breathing room. I think that a lot of families were caught off guard. A lot of au pairs were caught off guard. It's awful to see some of these au pairs being sent home because their families don't understand how to comply, can't afford it any longer. So I think we need some breathing room.
Sort of like this legislation that's out there that would basically put a pause on this until the end of June.
Yep. Grace period would be wildly appreciated. I think in that interim, what would be really helpful is taking the time. We want this to be a long-term success. We want this to be working for everyone because everyone that's been involved in it, most people get an extreme amount of benefit and value for it, whether it's the au pair or the host family, and there are amazing stories out there.
That was Kelly Callahan. She and her family have hosted au pairs in Harvard, Massachusetts. She's with the group Au Pair Families of Massachusetts. So now let's get some perspective from the other side. Joining us on the line is Tati Oliveira, a former au pair and a member and leader of the Au Pair Committee at the Mata Hari Women Workers Center. Tati, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you heard Kelly Callahan argue that there's this exchange that's deeply lost by turning au pairs into domestic workers or classifying them that way. How do you respond to that concern?
Well, I think it's a reality that folks are, you know, need to come to term that if an au pair is required to work 45 hours a week providing childcare, that is work, right? We can't just keep saying that this is an exchange, a culture exchange, because when they're caring for children for that many hours, they're working. I don't think that it's going to be lost. I think there's still, you know, a lot of room that they can still participate and be part of the family. What we wanted just to make sure and continue to make progress in history is that childcare is real work, right?
Tati,
and it should be treated just like that.
When you began as an au pair, did you see it as coming for a job or did you see it as coming for a cultural exchange program?
I thought of culture exchange. However, it was very clear to me that you know, I would be working with a family. And I can tell you, I was an au pair in 2003. I had a wonderful family. I had a good experience, but it was very soon understood from my point that I was the lucky one, right? My family didn't need me for 45 hours a week. I barely worked 30 hours a week, and I did have time to do a lot of things with them when I was off the clock. But this is not what's happening today. You know, we're having this conversation because families are relying on those 45 hours of childcare work. So if you put that into perspective, like how much time are these young people really having to enjoy the culture and to to participate really in the American lifestyle, right?
Tati, what is then driving your level of engagement on this issue now? I imagine there are a lot of people who were former au pairs who are not becoming active advocates on this issue. You didn't have a bad experience and you came for cultural exchange, but you're motivated to get this involved now. So where's that coming from?
Absolutely. Well, I'm a professional nanny today. If it wasn't for the au pair program, I wouldn't have fallen in love for childcare. I wouldn't know that being a nanny could be a profession that I could choose as my career path. So I have been involved into the industry with the professionalization, really, of the industry in letting people know that it is a very, important work. It is much, real. It's very important. And, I think just going back with my history, but also seeing how the program hasn't changed in almost 20 years since I was an au pair, and I heard stories of my au pair friends that had to come to my house to eat because they weren't being provided food, and then hearing more stories, in Mata Hari of all the abuse that's still happening today. As I said, the program, I don't want the program to end, but it just has so much room for bad things to happen. They have been happening. We just want more regulations, more protection. And what we're asking right now, it's really the minimum, right? So au pairs being entitled to minimum wage and, overtime protection, it's really the minimum we can do. But there's a lot of things that we want the program to, agencies and the state to be accountable for. So this problem can still continue.
So let's start with this minimum wage issue. The Boston Globe estimates that it'll cost host families as much as $333 a week more.
Yeah.
What do you say to host families who say, I can't do that? I can't come up with another $350 in expenses every week?
Well, we're definitely, as I say, we are empathizing with the families because, even though this has been in the law really passed over 5 years ago, I guess the agency really didn't do a good job keeping them in the loop of how this, what was going to happen. We do have a child care crisis in the whole country, right? Child care is expensive. So it is something that not just the families, the au pair are struggling with. A lot of people are struggling with.
Care.com says that the average cost of in-home care is nearly $32,000 a year, and in-center care is $13,000 a year.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is a burden for families no matter what in Massachusetts.
It is. We empathize with this, but this shouldn't come at the cost of a worker, right? So in this, if we go back, or do you want to continue to look at childcare as not real work? And I think if we go back, if they take this away, unprotect au pairs, like we just go back in time, continuing with the assumption that women work is not real work, the childcare is not real work. So what we're asking is just some basic minimum protections. There's stuff we are definitely trying to figure out what could have been done, from the agency side, from state levels, how can the program be better? But what I say is just it shouldn't come at the price of workers. Like we are workers just like any other workers.
Let's stay with that for a minute. Mm-hmm. So what about the argument that the higher costs will cause the au pair program to shrink? And as a result, not only will it be lost for host families, but actually people coming and hoping to participate in the au pair program may have significantly fewer opportunities. That would essentially be job losses in your argument. So what does one do about that?
Well, I honestly don't believe that it's going to shrink. I think there are probably going to be some adaptation period. I think we're going to be, of course, losing the families that are really using this program for the affordable labor and not really having the experience or the time for these au pairs to have the culture exchange. So, for me, one of the things I talk with some au pairs or even nannies in my community, they will say that they lost their jobs because of au pairs, because the family decided to go for an au pair because it was cheaper. We wanted to continue to be a true culture exchange, and I think that's what's going to happen.
So one more question on that front. You've talked several times here about the vulnerability of au pairs to different kinds of abuse, essentially, in the household. It's not entirely clear that this reclassification solves that problem. Kelly Callahan argued that, too. Do you see any merit to that argument, and is there more that needs to be done?
Well, I do. I do feel that, with some new protections, like au pairs, they are, if they're included, and, let's keep it with what they are domestic workers. We do have sexual harassment, protection in the domestic worker law, right? So under those regulations, we have way more protections that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Last thing, to these host families who are worried about this development, what would your advice be?
Well, again, I think it's really important for them. Like, we want to work together, you know, but I think look at the big agencies, the corporate, they knew this was coming. They should definitely be held accountable for not letting the families know and not being better prepared for this. And we want to work together, so we are definitely listening. I work with families.
I'm sorry, Tati, I'm going to have to stop you there. That's Tati Oliveira, a former au pair and a member and leader of the Matahari Women Worker Center's Au Pair Committee. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.